on the Colorado State Sports Network. From Learfield, this is the Colorado State Insider with the voice of the Rams, Brian Roth.
That'll do it. A big horn beatdown at Moby Arena to welcome back the fans. What a night for the green and gold.
All right, we're back at it here on this Wednesday. We welcome you to another edition of the Colorado State Insider Podcast. Welcome back, Brian Roth, your host. And, man, feeling extra chipper on this Wednesday morning. Why not? Boy, college basketball season is finally upon us. The Colorado State men's and women's teams opened up their slates last night. The women got a resounding 25-point win over Colorado Christian. And, of course, the men, man, they were terrific. An outstanding performance by Nico Medved's team as they beat Oral Roberts 109-80 last night in front of 7,200 fans. Moby was rocking. It was a stellar atmosphere. And, boy, what a performance by Colorado State. And that's a Ram basketball team that has big, big things in their sights here this season. Here's what we have coming up on the podcast. Of course, we're going to talk a lot of Colorado State hoops. Why not? We'll recap the game from last night. Hear from Nico Medved. He joined us in our post-game interview last night with Adam Nygon and myself. John Tanjay did as well. We'll get you John's thoughts. He had a career-high 31 in the contest. And we'll play back some of the highlights as well from that win over Oral Roberts. We'll also talk some Colorado State football. Rams, it was a tough one up on the high plains of Laramie, Wyoming last Saturday. CSU would lose to the Cowboys 31-17. And while they'll try to bounce back against Air Force coming up on Saturday night, Canvas Stadium, a 5 p.m. kickoff. Air Force coming in at 6-3 in the season, 3-2 overall. Of course, the Rams sitting at 3-6, 2-3 overall. So the records, both the overall and in the Mountain West Conference for both these teams, juxtaposed. And now CSU still has a chance to get to bowl eligibility, but man, they got to get healthy, and certainly they got to turn this thing around. It's a Ram football team that a month ago I think we were all pretty high on, and now a month later, obviously it's a team that's got to find that mojo that it had some 30 days ago. And finally, in the program, we'll talk women's tennis. Have a chance to sit down with Miley Tran, the first-year tennis coach at Colorado State. And she's just the fourth women's tennis coach in the near 50-year history of the Colorado State women's program. Came from Drake University, where she spent the previous 5 years. And my first time meeting Miley, she was hired in July, came here in August, hit the ground running with the fall season. And we'll recap that fall season. Really hit an historic fall season for Colorado State women's tennis. But we're going to open up the show with basketball. Man, I'm still buzzing from last night. I mean, you talk about Moby Madness. Last night was it. And it was extra special considering last year and the COVID season. And, of course, Moby was, well, it was a morgue last year, as all the arenas were last season for the most part. I mean, no fans last year at Moby Arena for a CSU basketball team that was challenging for a Mountain West Conference championship. And the place just didn't feel right last year. In fact, college basketball, college football didn't feel right last year with no fans, and kind of started to get back to what college football could be here this season at Canvas Stadium with the students turning out. But to see the madness returned to Moby Arena last night. 7,287 fans at Moby. And look, I tell people this all the time. I love Moby Arena. And I get around the nation with this basketball team. I've been doing this many, many years. And I've seen many, many venues. And obviously you have the venues that are just, you know, they are what they are, right? Cameron Indoor Stadium, right? You have Allen Fieldhouse. And you have Rupp Arena. You have all these arenas of college basketball that, I mean, look, they're the creme de la creme, right? They have the history behind them. But arenas in general in college basketball, Moby Arena is one of my all-time favorites. And we have radio broadcasters around the Mountain West Conference and otherwise coming to Moby Arena. And when it's filled, they say it's one of their favorite arenas out of all the places that they go to. And to experience 7,000 fans, the student energy last night was just sublime. I mean, it was visceral. I mean, it was so much fun last night. And what a way to open up the season. And the team matched the energy. of the CSU fans last night. They did. I mean, that was a performance that will stick in the memories of Ram fans for quite some time. The first game back following the pandemic, first time that Moby was rocking following the pandemic. I mean, it was so much fun. So, look, there's going to be ups and downs here this year with this Colorado State basketball team. They're really good. I mean, they're really, really good. And they have a good chance to win the Mountain West Conference Championship. Doesn't mean they will. They have a chance. They have a really good chance to make a run to an NCAA tournament. Are they always going to look this good as they did last night? Of course not. There are going to be some ups and downs. They're going to lose a game that they might not. You might not expect them to lose. There's going to be heartbreaking losses. There's going to be ecstatic last-second wins here this season. It's college basketball, but this team gave us a glimpse of what this season can be like, and I think Ram Nation is 100% all in on Nico Medved's team. I mean, you look at the contest, and how about John Tanjay? I mean, John Tanjay is a kid who you look at him, and his off-season workout regimen. Now, last off-season, he got into yoga. This offseason, still doing some yoga, and he gets the team to do some yoga as well. But his workout regimen and his diet here in the offseason completely changed. And you look at his body, it completely changed with it. Had a career-high 31, did Tanjay last night. Was 10 of 14 from the floor, knocked down three threes. Had one of the best passes we've seen of Moby in quite some time that set up an incredible sequence in the second half to Isaiah Stevens, who got it to Deshaun Thomas for the dunk. I mean, Moby erupted on that play last night, but he was terrific. Got his second career start last night, but again, 31 points. Had a career high 18 at halftime, eclipsing his previous career high of 15 points that he had against UNLV last year. And of course, that huge game at San Diego State on national TV last season, where he had the 4-point play down the stretch and that 25-point come from behind victory. But John Tanjay was about as good as you could possibly get last night. Deshaun Thomas, boy, he was terrific. Thomas, his first career double-double, 16 points, 10 rebounds. He had 5 assists in the contest. You look at Chandler Jacobs off the bench, the Division II transfer. I know Ram fans were dying to get a look at Jacobs. Going to give the Rams some athletic ability. His official debut in the green and gold, all he does is go 6-for-6 from the floor and score 15 points in 22 minutes. I mean, Jalen Lake, the freshman out of Wachahatchee, Texas. This kid's going to be a stud. I mean, he had 8 points in just 20 minutes last night, but he was one of the first wings off the bench. And when he came in, Nico Medved and the coaching staff put him on Max Asmus, a preseason All-American candidate for Oral Roberts. I mean, this is a Colorado State basketball team that is really, really deep. And the thing that I think excited me most from last night is on a night where David Roddy struggled to open up the game. David, I think, opened up 1-for-7. He ended up 3-for-11 in the contest. Had 7 points, 8 rebounds. And again, he missed a lot of time because of back spasms, but I think he's going to be all right. But David Roddy, who many people think could be the player of the year in the Mountain West Conference, had an off night, 7 points, 3 of 11 from the floor. Isaiah Stevens got it going a little bit later in the game, and Isaiah just wasn't his usual phenomenal self, which is kind of the standard he has set throughout the first 2 years of his career at Colorado State. He was still good. I mean, Stevens, 13.6 assists. I mean, that's a nice night. But Stevens went 5 of 16. So your two best players go 8 of 27 from the floor, just 2 of 8 from deep, and they combined for 20 points. In a game where you scored 109 points, man, that bodes well for this Colorado State team. Tells you that they don't necessarily need Roddy and Stevens to be monsters every night out in order for this team to compete. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't going to be nights this year where you have to ride the horses of David Roddy and Isaiah Stevens in order to win a basketball game. There's going to be nights like that. There's probably going to be a lot of them where you have to have Stevens and Roddy at optimal performance. But against a really good team in Oral Roberts, again, a team that went to the Sweet 16 last year in the NCAA tournament, team that's picked a challenge for the Summit League Championship, a team that has a preseason All-American on it in Max Asmus, to have Stevens and Roddy score just 20 points when your entire team scores 109, it bodes well for this Colorado State team. And, you know, look, you look at Oral Roberts, and They lost a big piece, a transfer to Texas Tech in Kevin O'Banier, but they still brought back a lot of guys, got a couple of transfers in, and of course you still had the leading scorer in the NCAA last year in Max Aitsmith, and Colorado State held them to just 20 points in the game, 8 of 22 from the floor, and the Rams really held them down from the three-point line as well. So it was a glorious night at Moby Arena. So much fun. As I had mentioned on the broadcast, it was a Big Horn beatdown. It's exactly what it was. All right, we're going to hear from head coach Nico Medved. Again, he joined Nygon and I on the postgame show, as did John Tanjay. But first, let's go back. Take a listen to some of the highlights from the 109-80 victory in the season opener for the Colorado State Rams. Let's go! On the angle right, off a Roddy screen, drives to the foul line, kick to the corner, wide open three, Tanjay. Yes, sir! Driving right is Moore, step back, that's a three. Yes! Back-to-back threes for Colorado State.
That's one of those threes where the fans would have been mad had he not shot the ball. They were ready after that pullback behind the legs.
Stevens top of the key for CSU, working against Aitsmith. Pull up three. Isaiah, he'll bury the triple. 2019 Rams with the one-point advantage. Roddy baseline drive all the way inside. Lays it up and in. David Roddy finally on the scoreboard. His first bucket of the season. 28-24 Rams. Jacobs three. Right down the barrel.
See Coach Medved kind of walk away from that one. Jacobs lets it loose. Kind of, okay, all right. Good shot, Chandler.
Driving depth down to Lane McBride. Lost the handle. Got it back. Blocked there by Jalen Lake. Get that out of here. Into the forward court. Here comes Stevens. Got it to Lake. Drives baseline. Floaters up and in. How about the freshman? The block on one end. The float game on the other. A highly entertaining first half of play. And CSU takes the 50-43 lead into the locker room. Tanjay in the paint, show and go! And the deuce!
And he is fading away. He's inside the three-point line, but probably ended on the three when he finally caught his balance.
26 for John Tanjay. Rams racing in the forward court. Nico Medved calling for him to hold up. Jacobs doesn't hear, drives down the lane, scooped it up and in! Timeout Oral Roberts. Back to Aitsmith, top of the key. 16 in the shot clock. Sizing up Tanjay, drives left down the lane. Rejected by Deshaun Thomas. Tanjay up high screen, skip pass to the corner. Here's Stevens, baseline drive. Great feed! The flush from Thomas. That was perfect. That'll do it. A Big Horn beatdown at Moby Arena to welcome back the fans. What a night for the green and gold.
Man, that was so much fun last night at Moby Arena, and great to be able to share that moment with Ram Nation. I know this team's just dying to get fans back at Moby Arena. All right, let's hear it from the star of the game. 31 points, a career high for John Tanjay. Just dominant in the contest. Played 29 minutes, 10 of 14 from the floor, 8 of 8 from the free throw line. The junior from Omaha, Nebraska.
John, hey, congratulations. First things first, tell me, what was it like to get out there in front of a rabid fan base like this and a Moby Arena rocking after a season where you basically played in front of nobody last year?
Right. It was amazing. It was a blessing. I want to thank God for, you know, giving us this opportunity. The fans were amazing. I know, I'll speak for myself, I fed off the fans so much tonight. I mean, you know, if I ever got tired, I looked up in the crowd and they were, you know, hyping me up. So I just wanted to keep going tonight. And, you know, I was so appreciative, obviously, from, you know, what we had to go through last year. So tonight was amazing.
You obviously were a big-time scorer in high school. I mean, you know, you get to this level, everybody was kind of a scorer in high school. And then you're trying to find your way through your first 2 years here at CSU. But as a scorer, and I know that's what you are, did you feel early in this game like, man, I kind of got it going on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was feeling it. But also I had some confidence coming into the game. I feel like my trainers, Grant Eberle and Hunter Longacre, really prepared me for this season, and you know, I want to thank them for giving me confidence.
Yeah, tell me about your off-season workouts. And I mentioned it to you on the court right after the end of the game, because your body fat's got to be like, what, 2%? I mean, yeah, you look like you're in the best shape of your life, and mm-hmm. and talk about some of your off-season training, because you know you're obviously as good as it can get health-wise.
Right. I really wanted to get my body fat down. I switched my, you know, my diet up. I started taking into account calories, you know, which is something young people don't really look into. But and then also with, you know, my trainer, I was lifting with Grant Elberly and Hunter Longacre. You know, he'd have me in the gym a little bit too much. He'd you know, call me back to the gym, you know, in the afternoons. And I feel like you know, they pushed me this year, and I want to thank them. Also, the coaches here, you know, they gave me confidence this year and worked on my weaknesses, and I you know, came out here and showed that.
So are you going to let Coach Medved put you back on the bench, or are now you vying for a starting spot?
Hey, I'll keep that up to Medved. I mean, Medved is one of the, you know, greatest basketball minds I've been around, and, you know, I trust his judgment.
Okay. Well, talk about, you know, first Kendall goes down and then David gets hurt. You know, talk about the kind of, you know, momentum or lack thereof in the huddle for you guys as a team when that happens.
Yeah, they told us at halftime that Kendall and David wouldn't be starting. So, you know, Deshaun Thomas, you know, my roommate, stepped up. But we didn't get shook when they went down, because that's something we, you know, not necessarily planned for, but, you know, we're ready for that. And you know, we had guys step up. We had Isaiah Rivera. We had, you know, Chandler. We had you know, Lake. So, I mean, guys stepped up tonight, and I feel like, you know, we really got it going like a team.
John Tanjay, career high 31 points in the Rams' 29-point victory over Oral Roberts. Got to talk defense. I know you look at the final score, you give up 80 points, but you guys were good on defense, and in particular against Max Asemus. And you guys knew you had to contain him here tonight. Leading scorer in the nation last year, you knew you weren't going to shut him down. Mm-hmm. But how were you guys able to contain him tonight?
Well, our last five practices just had, you know, his name written all over them. I mean, that was the biggest emphasis. Right. You know, he's obviously, you know, a really good player, and can put the ball in the hole as many times as anyone else can. But yeah, we were really focusing in on him. I feel like he got maybe too many points for our liking, but I'm happy with the outcome.
Yep, indeed. Well, what a glorious way to open up your junior year. Congratulations to you and the team, man. Looking forward to the rest of the season.
Appreciate it.
All right, John Tanjay, there he goes. And again, phenomenal effort by Tanjay, and expecting big things out of him. Certainly, he's not going to get, look, he's. Don't expect him to average over 20 points per game. I mean, that's not going to happen. You can't expect that to be the norm for Tanjay. But if he's a low double-digit scorer for you, that's going to fit right in to exactly the type of basketball this team wants to play this year. Team together. It's always been the mantra for head coach Nico Medved. And just another piece to the puzzle for the CSU Ram basketball team. Speaking of the head coach, Nico Medved, join us in the postgame show following the win over Oral Roberts. Nico, congratulations. Give me your overall emotions right now, because you played in front of empty gyms all of last year. Yeah, we got a little taste of the crowd 9 days ago in the exhibition game, but man, I mean, this is what Moby Madness is all about.
Yeah, I mean, I'm, to be honest, kind of trying to process it still a little bit.
Right.
But what a great environment, man. I mean, to have the fans the way they were and the students, I thought it was electric in here. And our guys just delivered a great performance, and that was fun. I just thought that as the game went on, they played better and better and better, and that's what you love to see. And, you know, the game starts, it's going to be touch and go, and then these guys just put their foot on the gas. And what a great performance. And I'm so proud of it. We talk a lot about our team and how it's going to take everybody to win, you know, this year. And right away we get hit with injuries, right? Kendall goes out with an ankle. David has a back spasm. And not only did we not miss a beat, guys just came in and they even went the other way. And that's really great to see. It just speaks to our depth and the character of these guys to perform like they did without a couple of key guys out there.
Yeah. I mean, you score 109 points. We could talk offense all day. But I know when we were talking in your office earlier about 3 hours ago, I mean, you were talking defense. How are you going to take care of Max Asemus, the leading scorer in the nation last year? I thought you guys did a phenomenal job on him, 20 points, but it took him 22 shots to get to those 20 points.
Yeah, you know, you can't let him make threes, and you got to try to keep him off the foul line. I mean, those are the two ways he scores most of his buckets. Now, I thought we really screwed up a couple of coverages, you know, especially late in the first half where we didn't own a ball screen. We didn't keep him out of the paint. But when you look at it at the end of the game, he made 1-3 when we lost him, I think, on an offensive rebound or whatever it was. So that's a great job by our guys. Again, we didn't put him on the free throw line. He made 1-3 tonight, and we made him work pretty hard for the 20 points that he got.
Well, talk about the depth that you guys have, but in particular, you know, Jalen Lake, who your first guy off the bench tonight, is the young freshman. Talk a little bit about that and what he gave to you tonight.
Yeah, I mean, fans are going to love this guy. I mean, he is he's got special written all over him, and he's got so much confidence in himself, and he's just continued to blossom every day in practice. And Joseph Lowe, we went out there, we put him on max, you know what I mean?
Right, yep.
And he's really gotten better defensively. He can score the ball, and he's going to be a big part of what we're doing. And so, we've got a lot of confidence in him, and it was great to see him come out in this kind of environment and perform the way he did.
Well, I got an interesting stat. So in the first 13 minutes of the game, you had a 16-2 disadvantage of points in the paint. You guys finished 34-50. So over the last 30 minutes or so, you guys went on a 48-18 run in points in the paint. You know, what would describe that?
I think a couple things. I think one, you know, we were making some shots early, but I was kind of upset. Our guys, I thought, were just settling too much, and I thought we needed to attack. And finally, you know, the guys started to figure out. You show them the ball, put the ball on the floor. I thought we had a huge advantage in the paint. And as the game went on, we started to figure that out more and more. And I thought we got really aggressive. I thought we did a better job in the second half of guarding the basketball one-on-one. And I thought we did a great job of not fouling. I thought that was huge. And, you know, some of the offensive rebounding I didn't like, but I thought for the most part we made them have to score in ways that they don't want to score, and that was to our advantage.
Couple more thoughts for head coach Nico Medved. His ball club gets the 109-80 win over Oral Robertson. Well, what can you say about John Tanjay? You went small here today with the lineup based on the opponent. John Tanjay gets inserted, his second career start, and 31. Ho-hum.
John is John's a bucket, as they would say. I mean, he can, when he gets in a rhythm in practice or whatever, he can put points on the board. And any fans saw that last year. I mean, he came in the game, and he's a guy who can put points on the board. And he was so aggressive. He just had that look in his eye tonight. And that's great. You know, again, David had an injury. Kendall had an injury. And we needed somebody to step up in a big-time way, and it would have been harder for me to ask anybody to step up more than he did. But he's capable of that. And I think it shows the growth of these guys, what Deshaun had a double-double tonight. You know, Isaiah and David, and they should, you know, get a lot of attention. But we got some other guys, too, you know, who can play on this team. And I think fans saw that here tonight.
All right, quickly before I let you go, David and Kendall, both seemingly okay?
Yeah, we'll know more tomorrow. Kendall hurt his ankle. We'll know more tomorrow. David, some back spasms. You know, obviously he got in the second half a little bit. But, you know, like everything else, we'll evaluate tomorrow and regroup and get ready for Friday. And but we got guys who can step up and do the job.
All right, indeed, Nico. Congratulations.
Thanks, guys.
All right, there he goes. That's head coach Nico Medved. And you heard right at the very end, and something I hadn't mentioned yet, but, yeah, Kendall Moore sprained his ankle early in that contest. Kendall only played 8 minutes in the win against Oral Roberts. And, again, that's a wait-and-see type deal. And David Roddy, you heard back spasms. You hope that's nothing that's going to linger here this season. But with Kendall Moore, I don't know. We'll see when he can come back. The Rams have Arkansas Pine Bluff coming up on Friday night. Arkansas Pine Bluff opened up with a 13-point loss at Creighton last night. And then you have Peru State on Sunday. I think they're out of Nebraska. Maybe Minnesota. I think it's Nebraska. Anyway, they come in on Sunday, and you don't necessarily need Kendall Moore for those two games. Maybe he has a chance to get healthy before they head down to the Paradise Jam, Virgin Islands, where the Rams will open up that tournament with Bradley a week from Friday on November the 19th. But I hope Kendall is going to be okay. Also wanted to give a shout-out to Ryan Williams, the Colorado State women's basketball team. They knocked off Colorado Christian last night by the count of 77-42. So they open up the season with a 1-0 mark. And things will get a little tougher for them on Friday as they will take on Northern Colorado. Again, another men's women's doubleheader at Moby Arena coming up on Friday night. So hoping to have another big crowd. Not sure if we're going to see 7,200 fans for that one, but
It's a Colorado State women's basketball team that opened up the season with victory. They look pretty good, and I know it was an RMAC team, a Division II team that they played, but McKenna Hofshield, the point guard and all-conference player, we talked about her on the podcast before, and obviously they have some transfers in. There's Ryan Williams, so they looked pretty good. Again, they'll get a better test against a pretty game UNC team, the Bears coming over from Greeley on Friday evening. One more basketball note coming up on Thursday night, Lucky Joe's Sidewalk Saloon. It's our Coors Light Colorado State Basketball Coaches Show starting at 6 p.m. where we talk Colorado State hoops. Ryan Williams and myself will discuss women's hoops for the first 30 minutes. Nico Medved hops on in the final 30 minutes to talk Colorado State men's hoops, 6 to 7 p.m. Thursday night at Lucky Joe's Sidewalk Saloon in Fort Collins. And yeah, if you're in town, come on over. If not, tune in across the Colorado State Radio Network. All right, we're going to move over to the sport of football. And man, tough times right now for CSU football. Rams lose on the road at Wyoming this past Saturday, 31-17. And it's a CSU football team that has now lost three consecutive games. Of course, you had the last-second missed field goal at Utah State 3 weeks ago. You have the Boise State game where you let it slip away in the second half 2 weeks ago. And this past Saturday, you lose to a Wyoming team 31-17, and a Wyoming team that came in as a struggling offense. But at the end of the day, a Wyoming team that ran for 385 yards against Colorado State. And I think that's the thing that probably surprised me the most from that contest. I mean, CSU came into that game 18th in the nation against the run. Rams had only given up 109 yards on average per game heading into that contest against the Wyoming team. It was a decent run team, but an overall poor offense. And man, the Cowboys gashed the Rams for runs of 43, 52, 87, all in the first half, and then really grinded the Rams out in the second half, really played keep away. I mean, the second half, CSU only held the football for 11 minutes of the 30 minutes, and CSU had to get away from their run game. And, you know, overall, I'm not sure I saw that coming. I didn't think that Wyoming would be able to come out and score 31 points. I mean, I thought if the Rams scored 24 last week at Wyoming, they would have won. I mean, I really thought that going into the game. And in the end, the Rams only scored 17, so there you have it. But Wyoming ended up with 31 points. But I, out of the blue, I mean, I thought it would be inconceivable that Wyoming would be able to run for 385 yards against Colorado State. And one of the reasons, and not the sole reason, and I don't want to sit here and make excuses and being an apologist for CSU football, but you got to call it like it is as well. And understand that CSU is depleted at linebacker. I mean, they have been hurt by injuries and on the offensive line as well. But in the game against Wyoming, it was apparent that Colorado State had some major issues at linebacker. And the biggest one being DaQuan Jackson. And I said it before last week on the podcast. I've said it on the broadcast, if you have listened to any of those throughout the course of the year. I mean, DaQuan Jackson, the senior linebacker, is having an all-conference season. He's the Rams' leading tackler, at least was going into last week's game. And he sprained both ankles in the game against Boise State a week and a half ago and did not practice all week. And, of course, that's one of the players that our guy Marty Cesario, our sideline reporter, was looking for in the pregame warmups, was number 5 in green and gold out there. He was fully dressed, and that was a good sign. But the question was going to be, how effective would he be able to play? How healthy was he? And DaQuan Jackson got the start and played the first two defensive series, and then they had to take him out. I mean, he just was not able to go, I'd say, what, 50% maybe for DaQuan Jackson? And DJ makes all the calls on defense, and he is such a good tackler. He's such a smart football player. He's always in the right spots. Well, all of a sudden, DaQuan Jackson can't go, and so Bam Amina steps in, very capable middle linebacker for the Rams, the backup linebacker. And Bam Amina, in the first quarter, tears his ACL. He's out for the game, out for the year. Well, then you put in a freshman, even though he's listed as a sophomore, in Sanjay Strickland. And Sanjay, a kid from Pomona, is going to have a bright future here. He's played well at times here this season. All of a sudden gets thrown into a role that he isn't necessarily used to playing. Well, he goes out in the third quarter with a separated shoulder. All of a sudden, you basically don't have any more middle linebackers. The quarterback of the defense, that position's almost wiped off the board. And we saw some gap issues for Colorado State in that game. I mean, the big runs, there was no linebacker at that second level, that stopgap. And, you know, Colorado State, I don't know what the health status is of DaQuan Jackson going into the game against Air Force coming up on Saturday, but I can tell you this. It's a very important position when you go up against the Air Force Falcons in that option attack. And you hope DaQuan Jackson can, he's not going to be at 100% for Saturday night, but you hope DJ comes back, I don't know, 80%. If you can get him at 80% going into the game on Saturday night, that would be a plus. If not, we'll see how it goes. I mean, that's going to be a tough task for this Ram defense if they're playing without their top two middle linebackers on Saturday night. As for the Air Force Falcons, 6-3 in the season. They're 3-2 overall. And, you know, the Falcons coming in this game kind of a lot like the Rams. I mean, they've lost two straight. Rams have lost three straight. But both teams coming off bitter losses to their rivals. Of course, whenever the Rams give up the bronze boot, that hurts, man. That hurts. It hurts. Well, for the Air Force Falcons, they had a chance last week to win the Commander-in-Chief's Trophy. They had Army, each of the two teams had already defeated Navy. The winner was going to take home the Commander-in-Chief's Trophy. It was a trophy that Air Force has not had since 2016. And Air Force loses it in overtime, 21-14. That's a bitter, bitter defeat for the Air Force Falcons. So it'll be interesting to see how Air Force comes out on Saturday night. Now, obviously, you get a rivalry, the Ram Falcon Trophy on the line here, but Air Force coming off a bitter defeat to a rival, Colorado State coming off a bitter defeat to a rival, and yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it all shapes out on Saturday night. But one thing we do know is for whatever reason, this rivalry has gotten very lopsided over the last decade and a half. Falcons have won four straight against Colorado State, and they have won 12 of the last 14 games. Now, this game is in Fort Collins, but every time I look at the series records between Colorado State and Air Force, it always amazes me to know and to realize once again that CSU has not won at Air Force since 2002, nearly 20 years. Obviously, this game's in Fort Collins, and we'll see if Colorado State can kind of break the curse over the Air Force Falcons and get that Ram Falcon Trophy back up to Fort Collins. Air Force, leading rushing team in the nation, averaging over 300 yards per game. They have the leading rusher in the nation in Brad Roberts, their fullback, averaging 101 rushing yards per game. He's a Colorado kid, prepped at Ralston Valley. Hazeek Daniels, their quarterback, does a pretty nice job, pretty good thrower. And then a defense that's been really good this year for the Air Force Falcons as well. So Rams are going to have their hands full coming up on Saturday night. Of course, State Pride game, Military Appreciation Day. Should be a fun night. I mean, hopefully we'll get a decent crowd out there. I know Ram Nation is a little down on the football team right now, but could still use great support for a rivalry game against Air Force on Saturday night. All right, the play-by-play voice of the Air Force Falcons is Jim Arthur. He's been doing it a long, long time, Jim. One of the great voices in the Mountain West Conference, and had a chance to catch up with Jim to talk about the Falcons and the matchup coming up Saturday night. Well, Jim, always great to sit down and talk with you, and always fun when the Rams and Falcons hook up seemingly each and every year, although obviously last year we did not get the game in. Let's talk a little bit about this season and Air Force, 6-3 in the season, 3-2 in conference play. Give us the 30,000-foot view of Air Force football through the first nine games.
I think you could maybe break it down into almost three parts, and the first part is getting off to a very good start. Okay. I think the second part is losing to Utah State because, you know, Utah State's been funny, as we all know. They came in and just went up and down the field against Air Force. Falcons had an 11-point lead in the fourth, couldn't hold on to it. Utah State wins. But then Utah State falls. They lose two games, lose to BYU, lose to Boise State, and they look gettable, but now they're playing well again. So I think that's that game is kind of over here on that side. And you talk about how Air Force has done so far this year, but now all of a sudden they've lost to San Diego State and they've lost to Army, two good football teams, two winnable football games, but that doesn't matter if you don't win them. And I said after the broadcast against Army, I said, right now, I think Air Force is really kind of at a crossroads because you've got three games left, in-state rival. Anything happens when you play an in-state rival. You have to play at Nevada. We know how tough Nevada is. And then you finish against UNLV. And yeah, their record may not be good, but you look at all the games that they have been in this year. Okay. And then they won last week. So now all of a sudden that game has some significance, and it's not maybe what you thought it would be earlier in the year. I think Air Force right now is at a big crossroads coming off the Army loss.
You know, when you look at Air Force and you look at the Mountain West Conference, I mean, Jim, I imagine Troy Calhoun's got to be preaching to his team like, hey, I mean, the Mountain West Conference championship is still out there for this Falcon team.
It is. But you're reminding them of that coming off the Army loss. And to play in a Commander-in-Chief's Trophy game and to understand what goes into that leading up to it and what that trophy means. And Air Force hasn't had that trophy since 2016. So now you're going to go on 6 years before getting another shot at it. And you've got to play a rivalry game right after the biggest game of the year. Army Air Force, I think, is always the biggest game of the year. RV Navy or Air Force Navy, very important. Don't get me wrong. And there's a lot of respect between the two. Army and Air Force hate each other. Let me say that again. Hate each other. And that is a game where you want that. I mean, you're biting your lower lip. You can't wait to play that game. And then you lose in overtime. And now you got to pick up the pieces after that. And oh yeah, Colorado State's waiting for you, and they're an in-state rival, and they're hungry, and you know they want to get their season going in a forward direction. And now all of a sudden, the Air Force season's kind of hit a few roadblocks. So you know, this is a huge game, and you wonder just from the psyche standpoint how Air Force responds coming off the Army loss.
Yeah, I may be putting you on the spot here, but in previous years, the last 5-6 years. And again, our Air Force has not won that Commander-in-Chief's trophy in that amount of time, as you just said. Has there been hangovers following a loss to Army or to Navy when all of a sudden the goal of that prestigious trophy is now off the table?
I think you've seen them occasionally. This year's club has been very good about the mentality, and you know this, Brian, the 1-0 mentality every week. They haven't looked ahead. They've been able to put stuff behind them. At least they did after the Utah State loss. You know, they realized they had opportunities against San Diego State. I thought they went into Army in the right frame of mind, and that was just a dogfight, without a doubt. But I think this is really going to be a test of can they put Army certainly behind them. And to your point, you're right. They still have something to play for. You know, can they win out the conference remains to be seen. And if so, can they get a little help and enough help everywhere else that they're at the top of the division come the end of November? So there's still some goals out there. They're already bowl eligible, but they'd like to pad that. You know, there's a difference between bowl eligibility, I call it, and bowl worthiness, as we all know. And I think Air Force would like to take another step toward bowl worthiness. But you're going to have to do it against, you know, in-state rival. You're going to have to do it against Nevada. You're going to have to do it against an improving UNLV team. So, yeah, there are things out there for Air Force to accomplish, but you're really going to have to shake off what happened here this past Saturday.
All right, Jim, take us into this football team, and we start on the offense, and Zeke Daniels out there at quarterback has experience, and of course, you have Brad Roberts, Colorado kid, that's leading the Mountain West Conference in rushing. Kind of break down the offense here this season for Air Force.
You know, it's really been a lot about Brad Roberts. I mean, here's a guy who kind of came out of nowhere last year against Navy. He had 100 yards rushing, and he had that in the fourth quarter. And you could see the burst that he had. And, you know, you think of fullbacks and you're thinking 6'2", 230, 240. Well, he's about 6 foot and about probably 205 right now. So he doesn't have the biggest frame, but man, he runs low to the ground. He always gets 2 or 3 yards after the first hit. He always gets another yard as he's going down, it seems like. He's been money for Air Force, and he's been bulletproof. And I hope I'm not jinxing him right now, because he stayed relatively healthy, and he's the guy. I mean, you look at him and you look at his carries. I think he's in the top five or six in the nation, or was earlier this year, in terms of number of carries. So Air Force has really been feeding him consistently. Last two games, not so much. We didn't see him a lot against San Diego State. We didn't see him a lot against Army. Talking to Air Force people, you don't get the sense that he's injured, but you don't get the reason for why he's not carrying the ball more. But he's really the guy. Then you talk about Hazeek Daniels. He's a good runner. He can get to the outside. He's had some trouble making pitches this year. So that third part of the option, when you want to pitch it back, little bit of an adventure from time to time. He can throw the ball better than people give him credit for. You saw that in the second half against Army. He's got a pretty good arm, and he can really throw it. So he gives you that 1-2 punch, in the sense that he can run and get some yards, but he's not afraid to throw it, and they have success when he does.
How about that Falcon defense? I mean, you look at the numbers, and they look really good here this season. Obviously, the Utah State game notwithstanding, I think that was kind of an aberration with the – yeah, I mean, sometimes you get into games, Jim, as you know, and it's just a track meet, and it doesn't play out that way the rest of the season. But this right. Falcon D has been really good this year, especially against the run. You know, I look at your two deep. I see a lot of familiar names. I mean, Trey Bug, DeMonte Meeks, Jordan Jackson. I mean, there's a lot of guys that seemingly have been around for a while.
They have. A lot of those guys missed last year. They took that turn back because of COVID, so they didn't play last year. And it took a couple of games, I think, to knock that rust off. But once they got going, I mean, they have been terrific in holding teams around 20 points a game or less. I think the season average, they're holding teams about 16 or 17 points a game, holding teams under 100 yards rushing. Where teams have gotten them a little bit is in the passing game, which is a little bit of a surprise, because where Trey Bug has been solid, Corvin Taylor is an outstanding free safety. But like Army even threw on Air Force last week, and I'm sure, you know, Coach Adazio and all the assistant coaches have seen that and the success that Army had. Army doesn't throw well against anybody, but they threw well last week against Air Force. So that's a place where I think Air Force would love to be a little bit better in terms of just overall defense and yards after the catch and things like that. But it's an outstanding defense. John Rodzinski has done a marvelous job the last two seasons with this football team defensively. They've really been good, and Air Force has needed them to really be good. You know, as we all know, offenses kind of come and go occasionally, and they stop and start, but the defense has been solid for the most part.
All right. Air Force has dominated this series against Colorado State. I think they've, what, won four straight. 12 out of the last 14 have gone the way of the Falcons. I mean, Jim, just off the top of your head, I mean, can you put a finger on it as to why Air Force has taken full control of this rivalry?
You know what? I don't know if I can. And, you know, rivalries are interesting, because there are swaths of games and years where that happens. For instance, Air Force, I mean, they used to run roughshod over Navy. And then Paul Johnson took over at Navy, and Navy won seven straight against Air Force. And you're like, well, wait a second. Air Force won 10 in a row before that against Navy. Air Force was the same way with Army.
Yeah.
Army hires Jeff Monken, and all of a sudden, they're a tough team. Monken's won four out of the last five, Army over Air Force. So I don't know if you can really put your finger on it. I know Air Force likes to play in Fort Collins. I know the teams love to play each other. I know they've got a lot of respect for each other. It's a cool rivalry to me, because I don't think there's that hatred, if you will, where we're going to go down and leave them as a greasy jelly spot on the field type of thing. So I think Air Force doesn't overlook Colorado State. Okay. And look, the Falcons have gotten some bounces along the way, and I think you have to if you're going to win games like that. But at the same time, as you know, and look, Air Force got a lousy bounce against Army. Otherwise, Air Force wins the
right,
game.
Right.
So if you get a good bounce if you're Colorado State, all of a sudden, now things change. If you don't throw a late interception a few years ago as you're driving up in Fort Collins, you know, that game turns around for the Rams. So I think there's a lot at play, and I think it's hard to say they're doing this or they're doing that, and that's why they've won so many. I think it's they just come out, have a ton of respect for Colorado State, and they've been good at times, they've been lucky at times, and that's what it takes to win a game.
Yep, 99-yard interception return late stages of the game last time the Falcons were here in Fort Collins to put that thing away against Colorado State. Well, Jim, final thought. We're going to let you run on this. What are one or two things you're looking for out of Air Force on Saturday night that would kind of lead you to believe that they're in pretty good shape?
I think first of all is what kind of hangover, if any, from the Army game, number one. I think number two, you know, Wyoming had a good game on the ground against Colorado State. And I'm sure that's a lot of focus this week for the Rams, you know, and can they take a lot of that away from Air Force, at least take the fullback away and take Brad Roberts away and make somebody else beat you. So I'll be kind of watching for that. If the Rams take that away, who else steps up for Air Force? They don't really use their slot backs all that much in terms of running the football. So then if CSU can take the fullback away, what can they do against, you know, Hazeek Daniels? And then on the other side of it, how well do you cover Trey McBride? I mean, he's everybody's nightmare. Okay. So how well are you able to kind of slow him down a little bit? And what about Dante Wright at the same time? You know, what do you do with him? There are guys out there that are playmakers, and Troy Calhoun and John Runczynski are worried about that, you know. And tight end, to me, tight end has always been a position where I think it's underused in college football. It really is. And there's a reason Trey McBride is so good. Number one, he's really good. And number two, the Rams use him. And they have an athlete, and they spotlight him, and they use him, and they get the most out of him. And that's taking advantage of your talent. And so that's what I'll be watching, is how well Air Force defends him. Because if they don't defend him, it's going to be a long afternoon, plain and simple.
Jim, always appreciate it. Thank you so much, and looking forward to seeing you and your man Jesse Kurtz up at Canvas Stadium on Saturday night. Thanks so much.
Looking forward to it. Brian, nice to chat with you. Thank you.
All right, that's Jim Arthur, the longtime play-by-play voice of the Air Force Falcons. Again, should be a fun one on Saturday night, 5 p.m., the kickoff. State Pride uniforms will be on display as the Rams get set to take on the Falcons of Air Force. And yeah, we're going to have a special guest in the radio booth coming up on on Saturday night. I think you're going to enjoy it. Of course, Mike Brohard filling in last week as our color analyst. Mike's going to be on the broadcast again this week, but we're going to go to the bullpen once again and bring in a former player to join us in the booth to add some color commentary for the broadcast Saturday night, and we'll tell you more about that later in the week, but really looking forward to it. Certainly going to be a name I know a lot of Ram fans know and love. Again, tailgate show beginning at 3 o'clock, kickoff Saturday night at 5 p.m. All right, we're going to wrap up the program talking about some Colorado State women's tennis, and they're under the new leadership of Miley Tran here this season. Miley coming from Drake, where she spent the past five seasons. She also coached at Cal State Fullerton. That's where she played her collegiate tennis. She's been around the sport of women's tennis for a long, long time, and hoping to take Colorado State women's tennis to new levels. Well, they already have here this season. The fall season is now over, and the fall season in women's tennis is really an individual season. The team matches start coming up in the spring, but CSU making history as they, for the first time ever, had teams reach the ITA regional semifinals and finals. In fact, Colorado State had a pair of doubles teams that met each other in the ITA regional finals, and they both qualified for the ITA Fall Nationals that were held last week. Why is that significant? Well, Colorado State women's tennis had never had a singles or a doubles team qualify for the ITA Fall Nationals. Well, last week they did. It's a women's tennis team at Colorado State that had just two returners, that five Division I transfers coming in. And man, they have an opportunity to make some noise coming up in the spring season when they hit Mountain West Conference play and have a chance to maybe make a run into the NCAA regionals. All right, Miley Tran, first year head women's tennis coach here at Colorado State. Miley, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. First off, tell us how you're settling in. I know we were talking. You got out to Fort Collins in about August, and you've been going nonstop, so haven't really had a chance to enjoy Colorado yet, have you?
I mean, I have. As soon as I got here, I had some family come in and help with the transition and try to explore, and so loved it right when we got here, and it was beautiful. But yeah, like I said, we've been traveling on the road quite a bit with our fall schedule, so I'm looking forward to spending some more time in Colorado because it has been nice, but I would like to be here a little bit more.
Miley coming from Drake University out in Iowa, where she spent the previous five seasons. When the job opened up and you started talking to Colorado State, what made CSU attractive? Because it's not a women's tennis program, Miley, that has had a lot of sustained success over the last five decades.
Yes, I mean, that's what a few people have noticed. But to me, as a player and also as a coach, we've competed against Colorado State quite a bit when I was over at Cal State Fullerton and also at Drake. And to me, I always felt like it was a place that could be better. And I have always heard great things about Fort Collins, and I know the Mountain West Conference is very competitive. And so there's quite a few things that brought me to this job, but yes, it was attractive, the roster that was incoming, and the city, the people, and mainly the administration that showed their leadership and where they wanted to take this program was important to me.
What kind of coaching qualities do you have that you think you can transfer here to Colorado State and turn this into the job that I know you think it in the program that you think it can become?
Well, I think my style is coming out, I think, with this team right now, and it's interesting with such a new team. And what I want them to see is how much I just care about my job and how lucky I feel to do what I do. And this is an amazing place. And for us to all be here at this time to take advantage of that opportunity, and, you know, I have such a talented group, so it's like, why not? Let's win this championship and continue to build the program and really show what Colorado State's capable of.
All right, so the fall season is mainly individual season. And then, of course, you get into the spring, which is more of a team-type atmosphere where you're playing other teams of the Mountain West Conference. Obviously, the Mountain West Conference championships come up in the spring as well. So you guys are done with the fall. Kind of give us an overview of the fall. And, you know, you come in August to get the team together. Boom, you go out and start competing. How did the fall go?
I mean, I'm overall pleased with the fall. I didn't think, the fall is really just to see where everyone is at. And with so many new players, I just wanted to get a gauge of the level. And it's an opportunity for everyone to kind of excel. And there's not that team pressure yet, but I think everyone did better than I expected. And we went out just going down south to Colorado Springs to start out with a great event. And it was a good start for one of our doubles teams and also all of our singles flights. And so overall, I was pleased with – I think there's so many highlights in the entire fall. I'd have to – it would take a lot longer to go through each tournament. But, I think we ended with a bang on our qualifying for fall nationals and with our two doubles teams there. But there's so much to highlight through this entire fall.
You mentioned the ITA Fall Nationals, and for the first time ever, it was last week, Colorado State gets not just one participant, but two double teams into the Fall Nationals. That's never happened before. Talk about that significance and about what that could mean for a kind of a step forward for this women's tennis program.
I mean, before heading out, I know our SID mentioned to us in previous history of how far we've gotten in ITA regionals, and yeah, it's some things to take note of to help with goal setting, but to me, I think we just go out there and expect to win every single match, and with these girls, they can do that, and yeah, we look back at history and what they did is phenomenal. It's a, you know, just to get one singles player or a doubles team just into maybe the quarters or the semis, you would be really proud of. But the fact that they went out there and competed for 5 days, won six matches to make it to the finals and play each other, I mean, kudos to them. It's never been done. I think they should be extremely proud of themselves. And it was an exciting experience because, you know, when individually you go out with just a doubles team, I think it was nice to have four girls experience that and be able to qualify and go out to nationals together and help each other out. So I think that was great to have half of our team out there in nationals.
Miley Tran, first-year women's tennis coach here at Colorado State, joining us on the program. All right, talk about some of the players that have been key for you guys. And, of course, you could talk about the doubles teams as well that went out to the ITA Fall Nationals. But some of the players, I know it's a roster that has a lot of international flavor, doesn't it?
Yes. I think I always have to remember all the countries that we're from, and it's awesome to keep learning about everyone's cultures, how to say their last names correctly. But it's interesting how well they've been able to kind of get along and fit together, so cohesive. And so I think the international aspect is helpful. But say that again on that last question.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, kind of point out some of the players who have kind of excelled, and maybe, you know, you don't really ever know the roster fully when you take a new job until you get here and you get your hands on them. But obviously now that you've had about 3 months with them, who are some of the players that I know you're looking forward to seeing coming up in the spring?
I mean, I would say what we have is a good problem is we have some players that came from previous programs and they played at the top of their lineup. And so I wish I could go through every single one of them because I think everyone has potential to play at the top. But I mean, looking at the fall with results, our standouts, we had Radka Bushkova who really did well in singles and is shown in every single one of the tournaments that she's the top contender. And she was heavily recruited by many schools. And she came to CSU, which we're grateful to have her. And so she was a standout, definitely, in singles. But when we finished up in this last hit and duel, I think I have maybe four different girls that could play the number one spot. So she had the best results in singles. But looking at doubles, we have three great teams, and two of them were able to show it in ITA regionals. And so, I mean, obviously, Radka and Matea, we had them put together right from the beginning, and they have, what is it, a 16-2 record. Mm. Have won tough loss that, you know, we always, there's days that you just can't win them all, but they just, and then they lost to the number one team at Nationals, so that's an impressive record just for a new team, and so fun to watch them play, and there's a lot of things we're still working on as a team. And then Sharka and Summer are some great doubles players put together that we just put together right before regionals, and they just immediately connected, have great chemistry, and excited to see what they bring in the spring. But we'll still work on some things as well.
Well, I know it's been a whirlwind, but 2-3 months for you. Welcome to Colorado. I know it's the first time I've had a chance to sit down with you. Hopefully you get a little time off, but obviously the spring season is upcoming. I know expectations for you and your team are high. Miley, thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Again, that's my first time really getting to know Miley Tran and had a nice conversation in her office here earlier this week. Again, coming from Drake, where she spent the previous 5 seasons. And yeah, it's just amazing that she is just the fourth women's tennis coach in the program's history. That's been, what, I think 46 years it has been around. Of course, John Messick, the long, long time coach at Colorado State. Jared Camerota was here for 5 years, and now Miley Tran taking over this women's tennis program, and really looking forward to keeping an eye on them as they get into their spring season coming up here in February. All right, that's going to do it here for the Colorado State Insider Podcast. We always appreciate you tuning in, spreading the word, subscribing to the show, and man, this Colorado State basketball team, the men's team, the women's team too, they're going to be a lot of fun to watch here this season. Again, the CSU Basketball Coaches Show coming up, Lucky Joe's Sidewalk Saloon, Thursday night. Join us if you can, 6 to 7 p.m., either in person or via the airwaves. All right, for Jim Arthur, the voice of the Air Force Falcons, and my Lee Tran, women's tennis coach here at Colorado State, Brian Roth saying so long. Thanks for tuning in once again here to the Colorado State Insider Podcast.
This has been the Colorado State Insider with Brian Roth. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation on the Colorado State Sports Network.